Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit. What's good, Fatherhood? I'm your host, James Lopez, representing for all the dope dads of the Fatherhood is Lit community, and this is episode 96 of the podcast. Yes, 96. The last episode did great on the number side of things with over 1,000 downloads within an hour. I'm always amazed and grateful for the number of listens we get per podcast, but this time around, seeing that 1,000 people downloaded it within an hour, damn, that felt kind of dope. I never downloaded an episode of a podcast in my whole entire life. Actually, I always thought people listen to them via a stream, not download them. So when I saw it, it put a huge smile on my face, and I have you to thank for that. So thank you all for sharing the podcast and telling the world that Fatherhood is Lit. Keep it up. We appreciate you. We all got that one friend that when we call them, we know our conversations will be full of wisdom and gems. Those conversations are usually lost in the ether, and this week I wanted to try something new with one of my closest friends, Mike Dorsey of the Black Fathers Now community. If you don't know who Mike is, let me just tell you that he's one of the realest fathers pushing dad life. Homeboy has written books on fatherhood, has over 250 episodes recorded of his Black Fathers Now podcast, and can be seen all over the TV dropping gems on everything from fatherhood to even the business of cannabis. This dude is everywhere. I tell people I only rock with those making an impact, and Mike Dorsey is that guy. Just like you and I, he abides by the mantra, impact over everything. Our convos are full of gems that we both take action on through our lives or even share it with our respective communities online. They help us both, but in reality, those convos help our kids the most. By us sharing our trials and tribulations with each other, we also guide each other on becoming the great fathers we know we are and can continue to be. Now we want to share some of those conversations with you in an unfiltered way, the way we have those conversations. I hope our conversations get your mind working in different ways, or at the very least, reassures you that what you are doing might not always be perfect, and that's okay. Being there to guide them is the real flex. That's the real blessing.
Dude, let me tell you, so it's funny. So you and I, you know, I do Black Fathers Now. You created Fatherhood is Lit. We come together. We chop it up, ideas behind the scenes. And it's so interesting thinking about fatherhood through that lens of what you just said, because we both are in the same age bracket. I'm 42. How old are you?
I'm 41. About to be 42 Friday, baby. February 4th. Daddy, let's get it.
Daddy, well, happy early birthday, my guy.
Let's get it. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But I think about, we grew up in this era where parents were still considered borderline perfect, right? Where you didn't see mama's faults and daddy's faults, and you do as I'm told, not necessarily as I do. And they didn't overly share everything. Whereas because of social media and everything that we do now, there's more of our life lived in the public, and our kids are now more privy to the good, the bad, and the ugly that we do. And so we have to have conversations now. And it's interesting how you talk about that camera's always running. I think that's kind of like a metaphor for how fatherhood is lit and being a dope dad and everything is right now, because that camera's always running. Yeah. And we got to be mindful of that.
I think you hit it perfectly. That's fatherhood. Like, the camera is rolling and we don't get to stop it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The only difference between a studio set and fatherhood is we get to take a break at the studio. You know, at the studio, you could tell Tyler Perry, you could tell Tamron Hall, hey, yo, I got to use the bathroom. in fatherhood, you don't say, yo, I got to stop and take a bathroom. You go to the bathroom and the kids follow.
Yeah. Ooh, ooh, ooh. You go to the bathroom and the kids follow.
That's it. You know what I mean? Really? They on you and there's no breaks. And that's, you know, and it works. It works because you just go with the trials and tribulations. You know, you mess up, you get back up and you go back at it. You know, that's the only thing you could do.
You know, and it's interesting.
No edits.
And I think that's so cool, because I believe it's important for us to understand that edits are not necessarily necessary, one, but then I use a quote when I, you know, do speaking and all that kind of stuff, that perfection is not a requirement for greatness. So it's like no edits are needed. But the reality is we don't need to edit and be perfect for this thing to be dope.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what we're doing now, because that leads me to saying things like with my son, like, I hope that what he's getting from me is that, yo, you got to try things, not that you have to be perfect, because I think that sometimes kids look at us like the parents, and they don't know what we're thinking. They don't know the thought process. Mm. We just get shit done.
Yes.
And since we get shit done, we're perfect. Mm. And it's like, no, that's not necessarily true. I got it done, but it might not be fully perfect. Ooh. It just might seem like it. And that's something that I think sometimes as parents, we put too much pressure on our kids, because that happened to me this morning. I needed my son to help me with the AC. We wanted to cover the AC. It's freezing in New York City, right? The air is coming through the AC. Yo, cover the AC. We're going to tie some tape around some plastic. We're going to do this, do that, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that's a simple task. Mm-hmm. Cover the hole. He didn't cover the hole. Mm-hmm. And I had to sit there and actually show him what I meant, what I needed him to do.
Mm-hmm.
In the perfect world, I wouldn't have had to do that, man. I would have just told him, yo, cover the hole, and he would have covered it. So sometimes we forget that our kids ain't perfect, man. We got to actually teach them and guide them.
But it's interesting, and that's going to jump into what we're going to dive into in a little bit of, yes, we have to teach them and guide them, but the funny thing is they teach and guide us as well through the process. And part of that was spawned by an episode that you dropped recently. And I pulled a quote from it. And in essence, one of the things that you stated, and I thought it was just profound, where you said that, we have to put our kids in positions, and I'm paraphrasing here, put our kids in positions where they can learn lessons from other people, but we still need to be present so that we can step in when we need to. We learn as well, so that we can, in essence, add our own daddy sauce to it. But then also to be there to make sure that they're not getting, infused with some bad guidance.
They're not getting finessed.
They're not getting finessed. Real talk. And so, yes, we got to lead and guide them. But the flip side is they lead and guide us in their own right.
Yeah. I mean, it's spot on. Both of us do a lot of media. We mm-hmm. turn down a lot of media, a lot of media requests. And one question that people always ask me is, where do you get your content from? Like, who do you study? Where do you grab fatherhood content? And they laugh at me because I always tell them, nobody. My life is my content. My kids are my content. Like, I don't need to go look for the Joe Rogan of fatherhood when I got my kids teaching me all I need to know. You know what I mean? I got to deal with all their nonsense every day. That's enough content, man. I don't need to sit down for 2 or 3 hours and listen to a talking head telling me how to be a better father. I need my kids to put me to the test. And they do that every single day.
I just need my kids to put me to the test, right? Yeah. Like, it's interesting. So I do a training and a whole personal development thing, and I call it the I Am Foundation, right? Where you basically learn, it's all about building who you are and really getting a firm understanding of that. And it starts with belief. And the whole thing is, and it starts with 4 questions. What do you believe? Why do you believe it? How are you practicing or reinforcing that belief? Yeah. And then finally, how do you put that belief to test? Because if you believe something and it doesn't stand up to testing, how strong is that belief to begin with? Right. Yep, yep, and yep. So what you just mentioned was talking about, like, yo, honestly, I don't need some fatherhood guru. I don't need some dude telling me how I need to do this, how I need to do that. I just need my kids to put me to the test. Yeah. Then I can put it into action.
Yeah. Then I can see if all that talk works, man. we know everything, right? We're superheroes. until we get knocked, right? And then when we get knocked, we're like, oh man, like, what do I do to get better? Well, what you do to get better is you talk to other fathers. It's not necessarily looking for that content every day, right? It's looking for where that content actually applies to your life. So if I'm having trouble telling my son, hey, we of color, I don't know what to tell you about police and being pulled over. Mm-hmm. Well, I could go talk to another father of color that has mm-hmm. dealt with it, and maybe they're lost, or maybe they have the answers. But now we can work together. So it's not necessarily, let me go listen to another episode. Let me go find a solution to what I'm having issues with. Because, and even then, you don't get the full solution, right? What you get is just the other thoughts. That's why you and I always click, because we have different thoughts, but we also have profound and sometimes similar thoughts too. But now we're getting it from different aspects. You know what I mean? I'm getting it from New York City. You got it down there.
Tennessee, Georgia, down south. Yeah.
And we still deal with the same stuff. It's just we deal with it a little bit different. So it's good to have that different, that the differences in your arsenal, right? Where it's like, well, how did my dad friend in Tennessee handle this? Mm. Maybe that'll work for me, because I'm not too sure how to do it.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
And I think that's being humble, right? In a sense of, we have to step in. Like, we can be confident, but we don't have to be cocky. It's like this fine line that you walk up. confidence and cocky. To me, confidence is I know what I know, but I also know what I don't know. Cocky is I know everything, right? Yeah. And I think that's when you get punched in the mouth. That's when you step in and you think you know everything until something steps in there. Because what is it? I forgot which philosopher said, what is the wise man realizes that he knows nothing at all, yeah, or something to that extent. And the older that I get, the more that comes to fruition. Like, the more you learn, the more you're like, dude, I don't know shit. Like, real talk.
Yeah. But it's crazy, though, because I also think that as we get older, we realize we don't know it all, but we still jump to the solutions that we have. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like it takes some time for, like, going back to what you were saying about being humble. Right. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, I'm the father. So if my son comes and he asks me a question about something, I'm giving him an answer that he's going to run with and say, hey, my dad knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily always true. I gave him an answer from my head. You know, mm-hmm, you know what I mean? So sometimes we got to humble ourselves and come back and say, we give answers really, really quick that might not be right. Let me go mm-hmm back and revisit this. You know what I mean? And I think that's probably the hardest thing for me. But as I got older, it became a little bit easier to do, where it was like, man, let me not get too ahead of myself. Yes, I have the experience, but that doesn't mean I'm always 1,000% correct. So, when we relay it to our kids, it's correct, though. You know what I mean?
That's in the moment, it's like, look, daddy's right. Until we figure out that we're not right. Then it's like, okay, how do I backtrack for this thing?
Yeah, I've had
that a lot of times. Dude, I probably once a day something happens. But I'll tell you what helps me is understanding nuance, but also understanding growth and development. So when you think about like a protocol to do something, and this is how you do it, a lot of times this is how you do it given the tools, the resources, and the circumstances that you have available, right?
Yeah.
But as the tools, the resources, and the circumstances change, how you do it may change. And so for me, it's becoming less about romanticizing exactly how you do it. Case in point, my little girl's in the fifth grade, and I have a degree in economics from Georgia Tech. So I can do a little bit of math and all of that stuff. But dude, this little simple math shit they're doing now, with all you carrying this and something.
I'm just like, why can't you
just, what? Say what?
You're not a core math expert, bro? What's going on here?
Dude, I'm like, why can't they just line it up, put this one over that one and multiply that times that, and then add the two and slide it over one. That's how I think, right? But I try to show my daughter that. She's like, daddy, that's not how we do it. I'm like, I got the same answer, but she has to pull out and go by tens and segment this part out. I can't even understand it, right? And it's crazy, but it goes back to this whole notion of we both come to the same answer. We just use different methods. And the methods change as the resources, the technology, and all of that change. And I think I'm becoming better with, instead of giving my kids, like, here is the exact playbook that you follow, to more so speak in concepts of, I want you to think about how to do it. Because, you know, think about this. You and I are in our 40s. The iPhone didn't come out until 2007. iPad didn't come out until 2010.
Changed our lives.
Changed our lives. But then think about college. We didn't have, you know, texting and messages and video chats and all of that stuff. That was like far. That was like Jetsons to us when we were in college. Fast forward 20 years. And now this is just like, our kids don't know what life is like without being able to video chat grandma in California.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anywhere.
It sucks, because it's almost like it leads you to say that what's obvious is not so obvious anymore. Right.
Ooh.
So it's like I like to think about like common sense versus street smarts, right? Or book smarts. Like, everybody always comes up and they say, yo, it's good for me to be book smart, but I'm also street smart. Right. So street smart and book smart, those are two things. I also think that there's a common sense smart too, right? Where it's like, you could be street smart, you could be book smart, you could still be dumb. Like, with your actions, you know, with the rapidness of your actions or how you take them. And that's something that I tell my sons, where sometimes I got to look at my son and tell him, yo, you a smart kid, man. You a top scholar. But bro, you don't think. Not everything is in a book. Not everything is set up in instruction format where it's do A, do B, do C. No, it is okay for you to use your brain, bro. Like, you don't need permission to do that. Like, you don't need permission to use your brain. Like, what is the problem? You know what I mean? And that's something that I catch myself with a lot, where I expect my son to know it because he is a brainiac. Mm-hmm. But they don't. Mm-hmm. They haven't had the experiences that we have. They don't know how to switch things up. How to switch things up. So like for example, I'm sorry to cut you off, but for like example, I was talking to my cousin yesterday during our last dinner of the Chinese New Year's, right? Okay. And we had a really good discourse on or debate on affirmative action and does it work or not. Mm-hmm. She's Asian, Chinese, she's a lawyer. I'm Puerto Rican from the South Bronx, grew up in poverty. Different stages of life, you know, different people. Mm-hmm. It was cool to talk to her because she's all about the facts. As a lawyer, all they know how to argue is the facts. Mm. But that's not always the argument. Mm. The facts could be the facts, but what leads you to the facts, right? So my example to her was, in New York City, it is a fact that you cannot defend yourself, right? If somebody comes to shoot you or tries to rob you, the minute they turn around, you're not in danger anymore. Mm-hmm. But you cannot shoot them and say, I'm claiming self-defense. But how does that affect morally, though? Mm. Because if somebody comes to me and tells me, yo, I'm going to rob you in the bank or rob me in the supermarket, and I got a pistol on me, I'm shooting them, bro. Mm-hmm. I'm shooting them to protect my kids. Is that against the law? Yes. Mm-hmm. That is a fact. It's against the law. I don't care about the law. I'm going to protect mine. You understand what I'm saying? So it's like not everything could be argued based on facts. And I think that's something we got to teach our kids, where just because you're reading the facts doesn't mean your argument is correct, bro.
Ooh, just because you have the facts does not mean that your argument is correct. And I think that goes to nuance, right?
Yeah. Because yep.
There is nuance and context in everything. And that's why it's very much hard to just look at everything in a black and white. This is fact. This is fiction. That is fact. That is fiction. Because there's a story or a narrative behind it. And just about everything has a story or a narrative. Sometimes it's all about who tells a story. It's all about who was the one that created the narrative. What was the intention behind this? Like, there's so many different complexities that come into play when it's people, because people are complex. We're not just this or that. We're not androids. You know what I'm saying? Where we go left or go right and that's life. Like, no. There's complexity and relationship and emotion and feeling. And I mean, all of these things come into play. And I think we have to be careful to not get our kids so black and white, right, wrong in everything. Now, there are some things that are obviously right, some things that are wrong, but we have to be careful to not get so black and white that we lose nuance. Because the other part to that is, like you mentioned, something really profound about how we need to teach them how to think. And it's kind of counter to technological innovation. So if you pay attention to like the algorithms, you pay attention to the Alexas and the Google Homes, and you pay attention to all the social media scenarios, the TikToks and everything, where they're curating your preferences based off of the data they're compiling. And they're in essence feeding you, instead of you saying, I want to listen to this kind of music, they'll just play you music that they think you like based off of the data that they've collected about you. So they're naturally getting you into the habit of not thinking, because you don't necessarily have to. I don't have to order groceries, or I don't have to do this, because guess what? They automatically order because they know that you drink one beer every other day. So you go through a 6-pack every 12 days. So on the 11th day, they automatically order you one to sit on your front porch when you get home. You know, it's just,
it's like they're a companion, but there is not really a companion when they're not taking like your emotional state for the day. They're just taking your data for the year.
That's
you know what I mean? And it's maybe today I want to try something new. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I'm in pain today. And I think that leads to another bigger issue, which is, how are we going to teach our kids finances going forward, right? Because if it's like, think of Uber Eats, Uber, or even just the Uber drivers, right? Or the Uber system itself. There's Uber Eats, there's Uber Delivery, there's Uber everything. Now you made it easy for my child to order food, right? Mm-hmm. So two things happen. He won't learn how to cook. He probably won't never learn how to cook because of that. And secondly, he's going to bring up some debt. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen with all this debt that the kids are accumulating using all of these services that nobody's teaching them about? Because think about it. Nobody sat with you. Well, I don't know about you, but I know for me, nobody sat with me and taught me how to balance a checkbook. Yes, we're old. We used to do that, right? We used to balance checkbooks, right? Kids don't got to do that. Now it's, yo, I just open up my app. How much money do I have on Cash App? Mm. Right? But yo, what happens when your Uber outweighs how much money you got in your Cash App, because all you're doing is just grabbing an Uber because it's easy. Mm. What's next, yo? Like, what's going to happen? Like, how do we?
And we can't predict it. We can't predict that. And I think to that point, I think it would be, we would do ourselves a disservice trying to predict. And I think it's less about the future. It's less about the past. It's about embracing where we are and embracing the moment. But then also understanding that concepts and principles that are solid transcend the test of time. Right.
Yep, so exactly.
So I don't care what methodology you use, whether you're using index funds, you're buying individual stocks, you buy mutual funds, you're in crypto, you're doing this, you're doing that. The concept of compound interest over time stands the test of time. Your whole goal is you want to figure out a way to return significant amount over time, and you want that to compound, right? Yep. Over time, whether it's in crypto or whether it's in index funds or whether it's in some other real estate, some other investment vehicle, it doesn't matter. Again, it goes back to what we're talking about. Don't romanticize the methodology. Just understand compound growth and compound interest.
Yes.
Understand
the basics.
The basics, right? Because the thing is, the basics or the concepts will transcend whatever technological innovation comes forward. And we have to make sure that they are aware. That's part of the reason it's interesting. Again, this is kind of old school, but you know, I'm 42, so call me old school. I don't know.
You're an old man.
I'm an old man. I got the gray in the beard.
Yo, I could barely grow facial hair, but it's gray. You just can't see it with the camera.
Whatever
right now.
Comes. But dude, I'm gonna tell you, that's why I subconsciously like to read physical hard copy books or paperback books. Because when you have a book, there's no technological thing there kind of curating or capturing where I'm spending time and how I'm spending time on this. So the next site that comes on my feed, you know, is something based off of this paragraph that I spent a lot of time reading. I don't feel like I'm being manipulated from technological cookies and things on the back end that are kind of pushing me down a path. And so it's like, I think there is a value in some level of disconnection so that you do have the capacity to think, to gather your own thoughts. Because if we're always connected with everything, the reality is we rarely have thoughts of our own because we're being manipulated due to the algorithms and all the things that are moving. And we don't even realize it's happening.
No, and you're right. You're right. Because you can see it in your kids. Like, my son, once again, a scholar, right? He has no study habits because he was never taught that. Now he's learning SAT words, right? He asked me the other day, Dad, how do I study this? He's so used to just going to Google and typing in the word and it giving him everything that he doesn't know how to study that word. To him, it's like, yo, if I had an exam, it would be so much easier if I could just go on my computer and look up the word. And it's like, no, you got to think. And his mother was like, hey, you know, James, how are we going to teach him? And I go, what we got to start doing is having him read physical books again. Because with the physical books, there's no distractions. And now he has to read paragraphs and paragraphs of books, of words. That's how he's going to learn how to use sentence structure to define certain key words that he might not know. Right. Ooh. Instead, he wants the easy way. He wants to just go, yo, Siri, what does complacent mean? And Siri should tell him you're being complacent. Ooh. Use your head and go find this. Go pick up a dictionary or go read a book that has this word in it. You know what I mean?
Dude, check. You just dropped the gem, and somebody might take the idea, and if they get the market before you and I do, but we need to talk offline. You just said, if you ask Siri, or we can create, you ask, you know, Tech Dad or whatever it is, hey, what does complacent mean? And the response is, you're being complacent. Go find it. You know, like, seriously, like, that is, to me, that is something that back in the day, to an extent, again, I don't like to do the whole, oh, back in the day, we used to always do this. But there's some value to when somebody asked you a question and they were like, well, go figure it out. Or I remember when I was a kid, you'd ask your mom, like, well, how do I spell this word? Go look it up. First off, I'd be like, well, damn, if I knew how to spell it, I could look it up. But it made you go through the dictionary and be like, okay, it's not this one. It's not that one. And I looked at the definition. Ah, this is it. And I learned how to spell it. So they would tell me, my mom, my grandma, all of them would say, go look it up. And I think there's an element of that as dads that, again, it's easy for them to just pick the phone up and say, hey, what's this? What's that? How do I get here? But the notion of thinking, I think we don't allow them to exercise that part of their brain, which will in essence, do them a disservice later in life if we don't give them an element of go figure it out.
Yeah, you can't, you know, the thing is in life, I think kids now are being kind of like misled where everything's at your fingertips. I need a cab, I'll just call one up. Mm-hmm. You know, I need to speak to a banker, I'll just text them on the phone. Like I'll use the bank chat. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, there's actually some effort that you need to put in. Right. So mm-hmm. think of like when we were younger and our parents would take us on road trips. Mm-hmm. Yo, they didn't have GPS. They made the wrong turn. They had to sit there for 30 minutes and figure it out. Yo, who's better off? Who's better off? The parents that had to figure it out or the kids that just used the map? The kids will say it's the map. And it's like, nah, the parents that got to think are better off, man.
Dude, I'm going to tell you, it's funny. You say it brought back so many memories. So before we went to drive to the beach or drive to DC or whatever, on like a, you know, little family vacation, my mom would go to AAA and you would go to AAA and they would give you a map, an actual physical map. Yeah. And the person in AAA, they had this little circle stamp. They would circle the area where you were going. And then they would find where you are, the circle where you are, and then they take a highlighter and they would highlight the actual highway or the
your trail, your path,
Dude, I bet you if I go to my mom's house, there are so many of these triptychs from AAA that are still in some drawer somewhere where they have highlighted the highway. You go from Interstate 20 to 95 North, do you get to this and 495 around? I mean, it was crazy. But again, that was MapQuest, which was the old thing before Waze and, you know, Google Maps and all that stuff now.
So technology helps, right? Because it made mm-hmm. things easier. But yes. I would still say that your parents were better off on the thinking side than we were, right? Because mm-hmm. it's like, or than our kids. Because mm-hmm. my son, if we're driving in Vegas and we make the wrong turn down some desert lane, his first thing that he's going to say if there's no service is, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. And then I got to look at him and say, Jaden, well, we're going to keep driving until we find a road. Like, duh. like, what you want me to do? You want me to just stop in the desert and cry about this? Uh-huh. No, now you have to start using your thinking process. Well, Dad, how do I do that? Mm. You serious? Like, how do you think? Well, mm-hmm. then I did you a disservice letting you play on the device all the time thinking Siri had your back. Ooh. You know what I mean? Ooh. And that's our problem. So that now that when I talk to my son, he hates it. And I know he hates it. And sometimes I hate it too. But if he asks me something, I give him that old statement that you said, which is figure it out.
Figure it out.
Yo, I'm here for you, bro. If you mess up, I got your back. But you got to put in some effort and figure it out, because if you don't figure it out now, how are you going to figure out the bigger problems later when Dad isn't around or when Mom isn't around? Mm. Oh, yo, worst comes to worst. What if your phone died? Mm-hmm. Holy shit, your phone died. What are you going to do? Now you don't got access to your bank, no more Uber, no more Siri. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Is life over? No. To these kids, life is over, bro. Mm-hmm. Life is over.
But you know, it's crazy, dude. Like, I mean, it's just funny thinking about that because, you know, we have our kids like sometime on a Saturday, if we're there and the TV's on, we'll MacGyver, old school MacGyver comes
in. Yeah.
And so, you know, you're not in the same bucket. So I grew up loving MacGyver. And watching it now, it is such an interesting thing because you have this guy who is basically the most interesting man in the world to an extent, right? Because, like, I mean, he can get stuck in something, and if he has a paperclip, a pack of gum, and whatever, he can figure something out to get out, right? Or if the car breaks down, he doesn't have any tools, he knows how to hotwire a car with a piece of pipe and a something, you know, I mean,
and a gum.
A gum
and a wrapper, yo. Juicy fruit.
Everybody else is like, dude, we got to take it to the shop and the car's going to be at the shop for 2 weeks. He's on the side of the road with his fingers figuring it out, right?
Yeah.
And to me, there's something about that. And it's like, I've always secretly wanted to be MacGyver in a sense that no matter where I go, we can figure it out. No matter what's going on, we can find a solution. No matter where we're around or who we're around, we can find a way out of here if we need to. And I think that's an element because, again, everything's at our fingertips. That's an element of life that if we're not careful, our kids will miss out on. And it will do a disservice. And 30, 40, 50 years from now, you know, after we're out of the picture, then that's something in which they won't be prepared to handle themselves should, like you just mentioned, technology go out. We lose coverage or the Wi-Fi is down or there's some outage or something. I mean, everybody, remember, what was it? What was it? Facebook or something went out a few months back and people
during COVID. talking about during COVID. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, people lost their minds. They were just like, dude, what's wrong? I mean, they literally were losing it because they didn't have this service for a couple hours.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's already doing its job, though. Right. It's already being a detriment. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I look at my youngest snack man. You know, he once again, 5 years old. The kid is a scholar. Mm-hmm. Yo, you take away the iPad. He is lost. Like he will sit next to you and annoy you for a whole hour telling you, Dad, what do I do? What should I do? Yeah. And it's like, yo, what do you mean? What should I do? Well, you're not letting me use the iPad. Grab a toy. Mm-hmm. Go play with your brothers. Mm-hmm. Yo, I took away the iPad. I didn't take away the TV. You could actually go watch YouTube on the TV instead of the iPad. But they're not ingrained or they're not wired to think like that. And it's like, yo, you guys got to start thinking. And that's what I tell my son. You know, my wife calls it. She says, James, you know, you got to remember that not everybody has a troubleshooting mind. And it's like, no, they need to have a troubleshooting mind going forward because life has become much easier with all of these apps. Mm. If they can't troubleshoot their life, they are screwed, bro. They are screwed. And I tell that to my son all the time. He'll tell me, Dad, how do I do such and such? Yo, did you figure out crypto on your own? Did you figure out NFTs on your own? Dad did not help you. You figured out a way to learn that. Go figure out how to accomplish your task too, man. Like, don't wait for somebody to always come save you.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? And it's a problem.
That's, you know, if somebody said this, and again, it's been rehashed on different ways or whatever, but it was like, tough times create strong men. Strong men create easy times. Easy times create weak men. Weak men create tough times. And it's just like, it's basically a cycle, bro.
That's crazy right there. That weak men create tough times.
They do. But and that's why it was somebody was, and that was an analogy. Somebody was saying why my, you know, say I drive a Mercedes and my grandkid will basically be walking. You know what I'm saying? And it was this whole analogy here. And it makes so much sense because as things become easier, you know, it creates weak people or because you no longer have to do things. On the flip side, if you go back when times are tough, when your back's against the wall, when you have to make stuff happen, necessity is breeds innovation, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's one of the things why, you know, my kids get mad with me because sometimes like you take away the iPad, you know, we'll take away technology and just make them figure stuff out. Ooh, they lose it. They get so mad.
They lost, bro.
But within like 3 minutes, we're bored. So if you ask my kids, if they were here, they would tell you, what does daddy say about boring? Only boring people get bored. That's the saying. Only boring people get bored because if you can't put this down and go to something else, like I personally don't ever feel bored. I can I can read something, go somewhere. I can stop and think. Thinking is, I mean, stories. I can sit there and just think about stories for hours at a time if I have nothing else to do. Sleeping, relaxing, chill. I'm never bored. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And we have to infuse boredom into their life so that they then start to innovate and open themselves up to not be limited to just the thing in front of them.
Yo, it's incredible. Like you hit it perfectly. My littlest one and my second child, they will complain. Dad, what do I do next? 15 minutes later, they got their Lego set up. They got a war happening. The other one will grab a basketball and start dribbling. And it's like, it's such a sight to see. Like 10 minutes ago, you guys were bored. 15 minutes later, you guys are having the time of your life. Mm-hmm. But let's not forget, the minute I tell them, yo, you could grab that iPad. Oh, man, they still run. They still zooming. Boom, we in there. Yo, forget about the war. Yo, the war's over. We in here.
That's real.
It's true what you said. If we don't take it away from them, right? That doesn't mean you have to schedule things. You don't got to say, hey, I'm only going to give my child 2 hours of screen time. Yo, let's be honest, yo. We lazy. We trying to live our lives as well. Let's be honest. I'm going to let my child have as much screen time as he needs to let me accomplish the things I need to do. But there still has to be a moment when you take it away and let them use their brain. Because like you said earlier, the less they're using the brains in the future, the less they'll think about using their brain. They need to do it. I tell my son every week, and I mentioned it earlier, I tell him every single week, yo, it's okay for you to think, man. Like, it is okay. I know you could ask me for help. I know if you ask your mom, she's just going to give you the answer. You ask grandma, she's going to give you the answer. Yo, the phone is going to give you the answer. Yo, it's okay to take 5 minutes to think about the different courses of action and what it might bring. It is okay. Like that, it is okay part is the part that they don't really comprehend to the fullest.
that's why, and I think you just gave the case study for why dads are so freaking important, because, you know, we understand that component of, yes, the answer would be easy. And yes, it might be easier for me because I got other stuff to do and I don't want to have to sit here and go over this over and over and over. But by me denying you the opportunity to work through an issue, work through a problem, scrape your knee up and figure out how to get up and figure the thing out, I'm denying you the opportunity to learn how to overcome challenges, overcome problems, to you know, get to a point in which you can grow into the man or the woman or the person that you're supposed to be, you know, in life. I'm denying you that if I give everything to you. And what's so interesting, because of our society, because we have a sedentary society, we have to go to the gym or we have to intentionally go and exercise. Because if you lived in back in the agrarian times when you were farming and doing this and doing that, going to the gym, man, please,
that's every day. That's everyday work. Yeah.
You didn't need to, right? But now if you're sitting behind a computer all day, or if you're driving all day, or if you're sitting in an office all day, whatever it may be, you now have to be intentional about exercising and moving your body, or else you won't do it. I think the same thing has to be said for problem solving, because technology is going to make it convenient across the board to everything is a touch away or a voice command away. If we do not instill this intentionality around problem solving, critical thinking, then it's just like our health declines and people show now. I think now that generations or their life expectancy is less than the generation before due to various health concerns.
Which is crazy. Which is crazy, right? We should be going up.
We should be going up.
With all the technological advances, we should be just be going up.
But we have to be intent. But if we're not intentional about it, it's going to continue down that spiral. If we flip the script and we all of a sudden, just like we need to do with our health, we start doing it with our brains and critical thinking and problem solving with the kids. Even though our kids are privileged and they don't necessarily need for anything, we have to throw a little bit of need in there for them to want to go in this direction, to just spark this thing of being a problem solver and a critical thinker.
Yeah. Or make it a little bit difficult.
Yeah. Right?
Make it a little bit difficult where they cannot use a device to solve a problem. You know, case in point for me was when we did the Got Soul event. I strategically looked for this guy named Soul Resell. This guy goes all over the country and he finesses, quote unquote, finesses people, meaning that the sneakers are worth 100, he'll pay 20 for them. And I call that negotiating. He's a master negotiator. The kids call it finessing, right?
Okay.
I strategically looked for him at this sneaker conference and I strategically told him, yo, that's my son right there. Finesse him. Mm-hmm. Yo, he laughed. I was serious. Go try to finesse him. I want to see him at work, bro. I want to see you try to get the sneakers from him. I knew he wasn't going to be able to get the sneakers from my son because my son didn't know how to negotiate, but he had the floor price of the sneakers that he wasn't going to get past. Right. Mm-hmm. But it was something that I had to think about and say, how do I get to test him to then be able to apply some of my pressure? So I told the kid, I was like, yo, go finesse him. He wouldn't finesse him, bro. He wouldn't finesse him. So I had to take a second route of just letting my son walk the whole conference and letting him sell. If he came back with less money than he intended to, then I would be able to teach him something and tell him, yo, why did you not negotiate or whatever? But instead, he came back and he showed out. He made tons of money and he did it without me. And it was so good to be able to see that. But it only started because I took a step back. So sometimes we got to encourage our kids to think that ain't easy, bro. Because us as fathers, we're going to be on top of them. We're going to be hovering. You know, think about your daughter, right? You got a daughter and she's out there looking at boys. You're going to walk up behind her and you're going to say, don't be looking at that boy, man. He's no good for you. That's you, right? You're going to pull out the shotgun. Mike is going to pull out the shotgun on them. Like, yo, you can't date them. And it's like, no, how about we let them see what happens when they date garbage? That's hard, bro. That's hard because no parent is going to say, yo, I know that kid is garbage. I'm going to let them date him. But what if we did? What if they actually learned that something that person is no good for them and anybody like them is no good?
But hold on. I think, this is interesting because this is a very good fatherhood conversation because our number one job is to protect our family.
Yes. Right? And that kind of like fuzzies things up a little bit, right?
It fuzzies it up a little bit, but I think we have to find ways to have consequences and risk but it's not like devastating or deadly consequences.
Yes, right? Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And so I guess a perfect analogy would be like if you have a kid, like Snack Man is how old, 5?
Yeah, he's 5 years old. Yeah.
He's 5. Okay. So like a 5-year-old, and you know, we're down in the South, so we got yards and fenced in backyards. I know New York, y'all got, you know, concrete and all.
We got shoeboxes, bro. Shoeboxes.
but I would think like a 5-year-old, and my kids are 8 and 10, they can play in the yard, in the fenced in backyard, and you know what I'm saying? Stuff is, we don't really worry about it, right? Yeah. But if my kids were, I mean, they're old enough now where they can navigate crossing the street a little bit and everything. But when they were 3, 4, 5 years old, I'm not going to let a 3-year-old go outside and play next to the street.
Yes.
Because that could be devastating. Now, I might let my 3-year-old play in the backyard with the fenced in, and I'm sitting there watching them and kind of letting them have some leeway to fall and trip and climb a fence or whatever. But I'm not going to put them in a place in which the stakes are so high that it could be devastating.
Yes.
So, as a dad, we have to figure out ways to curate environments where there's risk. Because like I let my kids go climb little trees and all of that. And again, I'm not letting them go 100 feet up in the air, but I'm teaching them. It's like, if you climb this one, make sure you test this branch before you step on it to climb this to this next level. Right.
Yeah.
So that you understand how to assess risk. There was a thing I read a while back, and it was, I think, in London or something. It was this concept like called free range parenting. I don't know if you ever saw anything. You ever see anything about that?
I've heard a little bit about different concepts like that. And I kind of think that you and I kind of both of us practice that without even giving it a title.
To an extent. Yeah. So basically for people that don't know, it was like this whole free range parenting thing where, you know, the way that playgrounds are set up now is kids, they can't fall off of anything. They really can't get hurt because the ground has like the rubber foam stuff. It's basically, so they really don't understand how to mitigate risk. Whereas you had the opposite extreme where they did like a lab school where they had basically young kids were able to play on equipment in which they could fall off. They play with fire. They could have sharp objects. They could do all of these different things, which we would say is like, dude, that's crazy. But they came to realize that these kids actually did not get injured any more than the ones in these really cushy environments. And the added benefit was they start to understand risk. They're like, ooh, this is hot. I can't touch that. Or like, ooh, this is sharp. I don't go over here. I stay away from the edge on this playground equipment. Whereas our kids aren't used to that. They just lean all up on the edge and ready to flail over. But it's just an interesting, as dads, we got to create risk, but we don't want risk to be devastating.
To be crazy. And you know, going back to what I was saying with the sneaker thing, the risk was, all right, you paid $100 for the sneakers. You want to sell it for $150. The risk is somebody's going to get you for $130. Where the risk isn't so much that we're going to go home crying.
That's right.
We're going to go home actually learning something. And that's what he did. Like, he sold a lot of pairs of sneakers. And then we went back home with 3 pairs of sneakers that he wasn't able to sell. Mm-hmm. Now that's when I could come in and teach him something, because the reason he couldn't sell those sneakers was because he had a floor price, but he didn't know how to negotiate to get to that floor price. Mm-hmm. So he told everybody, hey, I want $370 for these sneakers. A negotiator is going to come in and say, $370. I'll give you $350. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to sell you the sneaker because I wanted $370. Now dad could come in and tell him, yo, Jaden, you wanted $370, you should ask for $400. Hmm. But like that, they negotiate, they bring it down to $370. They think they're winning when you actually won too. You got the money that you wanted. Hmm. So it's like there's risk there. The risk is you're not going to get the deal done, or you might lose some money, but then I could still come in and teach you without hovering. Ooh. You know what I mean? And that's, I think that's where because I think a lot of parents are hovers, right? Like we were just talking about it. If a girl looks at a boy and she says, hey, you know, that boy's cute. First thing you're going to say as a dad is what? Who's cute? We're hovering, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, yo, who's cute? You should actually ask them, yo, what makes you think that boy's cute? Mm-hmm. You know, I tell that to my son, and it's so awkward, and it brings on weird conversations, but much needed conversations. And I walk with him and I see him looking at a girl. I'm not going to lie. I'll look down and I'll see his pants poking a little bit. Mm-hmm. Right away, I'm thinking, yo, Jaden, you like her? Yo, what do you like about her? Mm-hmm. He's not going to answer me because he's embarrassed. Mm-hmm. But now I'm starting to get him to think, what is it that made your shit pop up like that, man? Mm-hmm. What is it about her as opposed to the other girl? Mm. You know what I mean? And it's like, yo, how do we get them to think a little bit more, right? And it's like, all right, we shouldn't just hover them, see what they do, and then try to add our value our way once we see that we could actually fit in there. Just don't throw your lessons.
Ooh, like, dude.
I guess it would have been easy for me to tell the guy, yo, finesse my son. And the minute he started trying to finesse him, nah, dogs, you can't do that. You do that, I'm gonna punch you in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's no, finesse him, bro. Finesse him. Mm-hmm. But like that, when you're done finessing him, I could pull him to the side and teach him something.
So check this out. And I think, fellas, you know, ladies, whoever's listening to this powerful conversation, a dialogue between two brothers here, like, I want you to hear what he just said, because what was powerful about that was we have to create environments in which there's risk so they understand how to mitigate risk. But we also need to make sure as dads, because we're supposed to protect, we curate an environment in which the risk is not devastating. Exactly. Right. So, you know, like you mentioned the dating and all of that, like, no, I'm not sending my daughter off with some knucklehead in which something can happen, because the back end,
the risk is crazy.
The risk is crazy. Right. And so it's not worth me doing that. But to your point, we can have conversations. But I think part of that comes back to the notion of we have to create a safe environment in which our kids can talk to us. Right.
Yeah.
I'll give a quick example. Like, I remember when I was in high school, and, you know, once you start getting to, you know, age where either you're driving or your friends are driving, you know, that's when mom started letting you ride with some of your friends and go to games and go hang out or whatever. And I remember my mom told me once, when I first started hanging out like that, my mom said, look, if you ever need a ride home, I will never ask any questions. I will just come get you and I'll bring you home. And there was a time that, you know, I was out with the fellas or whatever, high school game or whatever. Long story short, I needed a ride home. And I called my mom and said, Mom, I need a ride home. She came and picked me up, brought me home, didn't ask any questions. Mm-hmm. And that said something to me that, yes, this is my mom. And I know she, because, you know, she's a mama now. I know in her mind, she wanted to know, well, why do I need to come pick you up?
She was ready to get you.
she wanted to. But at the end, it probably took everything inside of her not to, basically kind of berate me and, you know, probe what was going on. But she didn't. And that says so much to me in a sense that my mom creates an environment in which, yes, there are consequences, and yes, you should do the right thing and all of that, but I'm going to create an environment that's comfortable for you to be able to share and talk to me when you need to. And I think we as dads need to make sure that, yes, we want to be the iron fist, hardcore, I'm this tough ass, you know, whatever,
yeah.
But we need to make sure that we curate an environment that our kids are comfortable coming to us, because if they don't come to us, and remember, we're going to protect them, who are they going to go to?
Exactly. That's perfect. That's perfect, because that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
That happened to me with my son. You know, he does his little reselling stuff. Mm-hmm. Took him to the store. He walked in without me. He walked in with my mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. He knows what sizes sell, because he teaches me what mm-hmm. sizes sell. He took the wrong sizes, and he didn't check the packaging. He just came to the car and he goes, Dad, they gave me the wrong sizes. If anybody knows Supreme, you can't just go into the store and change it for another size. Chances are it's sold out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of me taking the time and saying, you know what, it's okay, let's just go home. Yo, I killed him in the car, bro. Like, I spazzed on him. What are you doing? You're the one that taught me how to resell. Mm-hmm. Why would you buy something that wasn't the product you wanted? What is wrong with you?
Mm.
So the whole ride home, it was quiet, crickets, unless Dad was screaming, which was I would turn back around on the highway and say, I can't believe you did that.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, it took me a whole day to see that I was doing it completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the moment. Which is great. As a father, you should be in the moment, right? But when you're in the moment, you got to learn how to fall back a little bit and not scream out all the things that are thinking that are going through your head. I looked at my son and I say, I don't withdraw or I don't hold back from telling him anything. That was one of those moments I needed to hold back, because my emotions took over. Instead of me being a father that was educating, I was a father that was scolding. Why would he ever want to go by with me again and run the risk of messing up and have Dad scold him? I had to learn. And it was really difficult to not only learn that, but then flip the script a little bit and then now sit with him and tell him, yo, Jaden, man, my fault. Mm. I spazzed and I shouldn't have. You know, of course, I said way more words than that, but paraphrasing, yo, I messed up.
Mm.
Next time, think about what you did and, you know, hopefully we'll do it right. So I still gave him the lesson, but I also took blame for being in the moment in the wrong way.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? Like, we should be in the moment, but sometimes we got to learn how to take that moment and use that moment for we can learn something instead of berating our kids, right? Instead of going after them and scolding them. And I it took me a while to learn that. I think that's really hard for fathers to do because, yo, we fix things, man. We there to have their back. So sometimes we scold and scream when we should be sitting back and learning ourselves like that. We could go teach them something. You know what I mean? I just want him to believe in, I believe in him. Yeah. That day, I'm pretty sure he didn't think I believed in him, bro. And that was messed up. You know,
but you know, but I guess the other part to it is when my pastor had this thing in which he said, love without honesty is hypocrisy. Honesty without love is brutality. And I thought about that because it's like we have to have this balance of love and honesty. And no matter what, because again, we're going to screw up. Dude, we're dads. Yeah. We're going to say the wrong thing. We're going to get pissed off. We're going to get mad. Might throw something and be like, dude, I'm, you know, it happens, right?
We spaz out.
Like, we're human, right?
It's human, yeah. It's
not a requirement for greatness. We know that. But the thing is, if it comes back to this whole notion of we have to always emphasize the fact that I love you and I'm going to be honest with you. It's the balance of the two. I think that gives us the grace to then be able to come back, like you said, because you've shown love and you've shown honesty. So when you do spaz and you screw up, you can come back and fix it. But if we're all just brutal honesty all the time and it doesn't appear that we're loving, then it's going to be hard to come back because they're not going to believe it. On the flip side, if we're all just lovey-dovey, but we're not being honest, we're telling them stories to make them feel good, then they can't trust us because once they find out that we've been telling lies all along, then why would they come back to us for advice? So as dads, we really got to be very mindful of that whole honesty and love at the same time as we do things and know that we're going to screw up. And it's okay because we ain't got to be perfect to be great.
Yeah. And who could judge you? Mm-hmm. Like as a father, who could judge you? Like nobody else should be able to judge you. You know, you're my homeboy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you judge my parenting. Mm-hmm. The person that I care about that has to judge me is my kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I messed up. The rest of the world, screw the rest of the world. I don't care if they know I messed up. My child needs to know that I messed up and I'm going to do better. And I'm still going to have your back.
Mm-hmm. And you know that what I mean? Love you.
And that I love you, man. That's it. So they are the main people that we need to do these things for. Like, I think sometimes a lot of the parents, they spaz, but secretly they're spazzing because they're embarrassed that the world might see their kids do wrong. And it's like, yo, who the hell cares?
Mm.
Who the hell cares? Yo, my son shoots air balls all the time, bro. Mm. If I see a parent laugh, I'm laughing with him. It's not a big deal. Yo, he's not Michael Jordan, bro.
It's okay.
So it's okay. It is okay to mess up. It's what you do after. And I think as fathers or as men, we're not taught that, man. We're taught, yo, you messed up. You're garbage, bro. Mm-hmm. Get to the side. And it's like, no, we can mess up like everybody else because we could fix it like everybody else. It doesn't matter. The people that matter are the ones you affect, the kids.
But as long as we build that framework of love and honesty at the same time. And see, that's the thing. And that's why, like, if you're a dad listening and maybe you've not done a good job with that, it's time to flip the script and from this point forward, commit to love and honesty and how I operate. And again, honesty is, I'm going to tell you the truth, but honesty and love and understanding context is, I'm going to tell you the truth, but maybe I don't need to tell you at this moment. Maybe I need to tell you this evening, or maybe I need to tell you tomorrow.
Yes.
Because the other part to it is we feel like I got to tell you right here, right now. But it's like, because emotions are high, this is not the time. It's kind of, and this translates into, you know, you and I are both married as well. This translates into interactions with our spouse. It's like, okay, you know, we love our spouse. We want to be with them for the rest of our life. And we're going to do this and go to do that and grow old together. But then there are days in which she is pissed off at me. And then there are probably days in which I'm pissed off at her. And there are moments in which, okay, we need to address this, but this might not be the right time to address it. Let's sleep and address it in the morning, or let's address it after dinner, or right now, let's go cool off. You go exercise, I go exercise, and we come back and then we talk about it. But the thing is, we have to understand that being honest does not mean that you have to do this right here, right now, and you know,
because you have
context and understanding as well.
Yeah, because the message when it comes out with emotions, it could be all screwed up, man. Like the right message, it might not come through your mouth. And that's me. You know, I'm a very educated dude from the South Bronx that I don't code switch anymore, bro. Like, I used to code switch like crazy in meetings. Now I work for myself. I don't code switch on my kids. So what you're going to get from me if I'm upset is not, yo, Jaden, you know, I love you. Let me hug you. Let me wait to the side. It's going to be, what the fuck are you doing? Like, what the? And my wife is going to be like, yo, relax. And it's just that it's because of the amount of care that's in me. I care so much about my kids the same way you care so much about your kids that sometimes our emotions will take over. And that's okay. Just learn how to par it back a little bit for the next time. And then also learn to say, yo, I messed up. I think as fathers, one of our greatest tools, one of the greatest things we could tell our kids is, yo, I messed up. Not you. How many of us are actually willing to do that without sacrificing our manhood? Because that's what they're going to say. They're going to say, I can never tell my kid I'm wrong because that's my manhood, bro. I'm the man here. I'm the father. Then you're not teaching them anything. It's okay to be wrong, bro. It is okay. It is okay. And I think sometimes that's something that a lot of fathers need to hear. So to the dads out there, when you mess up, yo, just don't mess up and go sleep it off. Take a break and come back and revisit it. You might not have to revisit it with the same conversation. You can switch it up. Switch it up to something that makes sense to you. But revisit it. Just don't tell your kids they suck and walk away, bro. Because a lot of us do that. We might not say, yo, you suck. But the actions and the way that we say these things to them, they take it as, yo, you suck. You can never get anything right. That's whack, bro. That's whack. How would we feel as the kids? You know what I mean? Like, my dad never told me sorry. My dad, one time, when I was younger, my dad was not about the beating on kids or nothing like that. He would never hit. He hit me one time my whole entire life. And it was a time that he thought I stole money from him at a jewelry shop. Right? He didn't take the time to say, yo, let me see the videos, which back then there probably weren't that many videos, right? He didn't take the time to think that maybe the guy that was selling us the jewelry stole it, or maybe he lost the money. Instead, he thought I lost the money, right? We went all the way home from Chinatown, New York City to the Bronx, him screaming at me on the train, embarrassing me. I'll never forget that. I knew I didn't steal the money. Eventually, he knew I didn't steal the money. He never told me sorry. That sucks, bro. I don't want to be that dad. I don't want to be that dad.
I'm going to tell you what's interesting. And it makes me think about, because, you know, we're recording this like the day after like the AFC and the NFC championship games. We're going to the Super Bowl and everything. And, you know, both of them were really good games. But the thing is,
great games, man. Great games.
But the funny thing is, as much as things go up and down, drama this, drama that, it all comes down to how does the game end? Right.
Yeah.
What was the final score? And when you just mentioned like being berated or your dad hit you or whatever, had your dad at some point, whether it's right then or a little bit after that, apologized for that. Yeah. Hey, I'm sorry. I found this or whatever. Truthfully, you may not have even remembered that whole incident.
Exactly. But that's why I'm agreeing with you. I agree with you.
But I think it's kind of like a game. That game ended with him hitting you and berating you. So how did this game end? It ended with you getting fussed at and feeling like you wasn't shit, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if the game ended with, okay, yeah, that happened, but, you know, it's overtime and he came back and he said, you know what, dude, I was wrong. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. You know, I lost my cool, boom, boom, boom. You would have remembered the score because people don't remember all the nuances of the game.
Yeah.
Most people just remember what was the final score.
Exactly, right? Man. Yeah.
And so, and I think for us as dads, we it's probably a good time to kind of put a pin in our conversation because we're gonna have more of these. I think this
And what's crazy was that for this one, we just went off the dome and this is value. So I think what you're trying to say now is it's a good way to wrap it up and give them some some pointers, right? Like some bullet points of, yo, this is, you know, this is what we talked about, and this is something that we learned. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope everybody who listens to this takes action and thinks about it. Again, perfection is not a requirement for greatness. Learn from your kids. You don't have to be perfect, right? You do not have to be perfect, and you don't know everything. And if you screw up, come back and apologize for it. Your kids need to hear how you messed up so that they understand that it's okay to apologize as they move forward. But you need to also create a framework of love and honesty in your conversation. And then just be who you are. Again, just don't who you are is enough. How you
it matters, bro. It matters. The way we do things matters, bro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's real. It's real.
It is what it is. The way we do things, the way we handle things, it's gonna impact our kids for their lifetime. Mm-hmm. So it matters. It matters how we do things, not how mm-hmm. others do it. And going back to, you know, you just summed it up greatly, right? I'm gonna add to that, which is, yo, remember who you're doing it for. Mm. You're doing it for your kids, bro. You're not doing it for nobody else. So, you know, that old lady that be in the window screaming at everybody that she's super nosy, you ain't doing it for her. Mm-hmm. You ain't doing it for her because your kids got to deal with the consequences of your lessons, not her. Ooh. You know what I mean? So if you fuck up or you mess up, yo, by all means, take the L and move forward, yo. Mm-hmm. Move forward. Who matters is your kids. Ultimately, that's who matters. That's who we do it for. Who cares what others think? Mm-hmm. That's really hard for us. And it's hard for me because, once again, I'm a sports dad. If my son is shooting air balls, I know they laughing at my son.
Because I'm laughing too.
But you know what we're going to do? We're going to go shoot some jump shots after that game, though, because we matter. And I'm going to be up in there making my presence felt with them.
There it is. Who do we do it for? We do it for the kids.
That's right. And that's the only ones that matter, man, because eventually they're the ones that got to live with that life. You know what I mean? We could die. We could die tomorrow. Our kids got to carry our lessons on for life, man. So think about that and think about how those lessons are pushed to your kids.
Dude, you know, it's funny who we do it for. We do it for the kids. I think, honestly, that's an interesting concept. And I think that's probably the title of our conversations that we'll have going forward. We do it for the kids.
Yeah, and so, because it's the truth.
That's the truth. Well, yo, man, I appreciate it. Dude, we're going to have this thing rocking and rolling going forward. And, you know, I'm Mike D with Black Fathers Now. Subscribe anywhere you hear Black Fathers Now podcast. James, drop your stuff, man.
Oh, man, I'm James Lopez from Fatherhood is Lit, you know, representing all the dope dads of the world like Mike D, man. So, you know what we like to say, make your presence felt your way. It matters. Fatherhood is lit. You know what I mean?
It is. Well, hey, until next time, y'all be blessed, well, and wise, and we'll get at you. Holler back.
Peace. For sure.
As fathers, making friends isn't always easy. Having great unbiased conversations about fatherhood with someone you trust isn't always easy either. But all of that is needed as we ourselves grow with our kids. When we first started to talk about recording our conversations, we thought they would help fathers. And you know what? We know they still will. But what I got from this conversation with Mike is that we aren't really just doing it for the dads. We are doing it for the kids that have dope fathers like yourself. The reason I say that is because we ourselves want to be better and even better fathers every day that passes on. By us wanting to be better, our kids win. Our kids get to grow with the lessons we ourselves learn and the actions we take from them. If that's not a blessing, I don't know what is. I hope this chat was valuable to you, as they are always everything I didn't know I needed. We are here for you. Hit us up and let us know how we both can do better serving you. Or simply hit us up to say fatherhood is lit. I love those the most. Remember, we matter. So do our actions. Go make your presence felt like a real one. Your way. Fatherhood is lit. Thank you.